And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for joining us here on this beautiful Saturday afternoon as we come your way every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we also rebroadcast this program on SQR.FM. So whichever broadcast you're listening to, sit back, relax, and enjoy the program. We hope that we give you some new ideas for new ways of living your life, freeing yourself up from a lot of the what we like to call baggage that kind of holds us down. Today we're going to delve into prayer, practical solutions in economic hard times. My guest is Ron Ballard, and he is basically an international speaker, practitioner, and teacher of Christian Science Healing. And Ron, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program.
Thank you, Richard. Good to be here with you.
As we converse, you are here in the Santa Barbara area to share a talk, which by the time this program airs will have taken place, about that very title that I mentioned, Prayer, Practical Solutions in Economic Hard Times. And I remember when I first read that title, the first thing that came to my mind was, does it have to be economic hard times? I mean, we have hard times all over the place. And that actually led me to another thought. Is there a way to heal ourselves from having hard times, Ron?
Well, exactly, Richard. The talk uses the venue of the economy, but the real focus of the talk is on the effectiveness of prayer and how people can learn to take dominion in their lives.
Now, there are many definitions of, people have different concepts and ideas of what prayer is. Can you define for us from your perspective as a practitioner of Christian Science, what is prayer?
Well, that's a great question, really. I think for many people, prayer is somewhat of a mystical process in that they pray to a god or a deity that they may not fully understand, with the hope of receiving some sort of miracle to get them out of the mess that they've gotten themselves into. But our sense of prayer is really quite different. It is a dynamic of thought that strives to understand the divine nature and character, and then put that understanding, that nature or character, into practice in everyday experience. So we'd probably say that prayer is a more active than passive experience. It is a process of really employing the ideas in everyday experience.
Now, there are those who would, I've heard them before, more in a satirical fashion. God, if you will just do this one thing for me right now, I will never do this again, or I will do this other thing. I will change my life. I will go in this direction, that direction. Is that prayer?
Well, sometimes all of those things are starting points.
Okay.
You know, I don't know how much it really qualifies for as prayer, but sometimes it just gets us to that point where we're willing to change. Mm-hmm. And to bring our lives more into accord or coincidence with the divine nature. The more that we bring ourselves in accord with that divine nature, the more we're going to find success and harmony in our experience.
That seems to be sort of a tough one, a tough nut to crack, so to speak, because of the world in which we live. It's kind of hard to stay focused. If we want to focus on economic hard times, that's what everybody's mindsets are on. They're listening to the news for the next shoe to drop, and then the third shoe, and the fourth shoe, and the fifth shoe. And they see they're not able to see past the drama and the trauma, if you will. If we were to look back in our history, just our most recent history of the past 100 years, we've been through this more than 3 or 4 times by some people's reckonings, more specifically, the Great Depression. And guess what? We're still here.
Well, you know, I think one of the tremendous benefits of prayer is that it helps change your perspective. Prayer is a process of thinking that moves you from preoccupation with what the problem is to beginning to understand where the solutions lie. Mm. And a comment that I make in my lecture is an observation by a well-known industrialist and philanthropist, Charles Kettering. And Kettering observed in his vast experience in economic situations that he's always amazed at how readily people understand a problem, but how difficult it is for them to perceive a solution. And he goes on to say, and why should that be, since a solution always exists within the context of a challenge? It just takes a change of perspective in order to be able to see it. And so, you know, that's what this lecture is really about, is helping people understand how they can change their perspective.
And that's what we're trying to do here on this program, is help people to change their perspectives by looking at things from a different angle, a different viewpoint. I use the analogy of a circle, and there's this event going on in the center, and we're all points on that circle. And if we just keep moving around the circle, we're going to see it a little differently and a little differently. Or if we talk to the people next to us and down the ring of the circle, we will get a different perspective, which might give us an idea as to how to look at it differently and have a different understanding, a different emotional reaction to it, and again, come up with those solutions.
Well, you know, that can even be the process of prayer, especially if you are willing and wanting to see new insight and new perspectives, that prayers come in a variety of ways. Sometimes people think of them as kind of a voice, you know, that comes from heaven. But that voice could very well be the person sitting next to you that gives you an insight or an idea. That voice can come from a variety of situations. The important part about it is, and the reason it's more prayer than just looking to other humans for advice, is that you really want to be open to that spiritual sense of inspiration and insight, because that's the thing that's going to carry you beyond just the human perspective.
And we're going to talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay right where you are. Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I am joined by Ron Ballard, who is a practitioner within Christian Science. And we're talking about not just prayer as far as practical solutions in economic hard times, but in any time for that matter, in terms of when we talk about healing, we all have a pretty good idea of what that means, Ron. Usually it's referring to the physical body. I strained my shoulder on a Sunday lifting rocks and boulders to put a little border around our garden. And in 2 days, I just was in so much pain, it was unbelievable. And I'm doing great now, no problem. But what other types of healing are there?
Well, that's a great question, really. I think you're absolutely right. Very frequently when people hear the word healing, they're thinking in terms of physical healing. But there's obviously a need for healing in all aspects of life. Sometimes there's need for healing in relationship situations. Sometimes there's a need for healing in our work situations or in academic context. Basically, healing is about bringing out a sense of wholeness. And that wholeness is a matter of discovering what things are truly available to you. So, for instance, that person in an academic setting may be struggling with just trying to grasp certain concepts or principles in a mathematics class. And, you know, there's, of course, all sorts of theories today about people's inabilities to read or to reason correctly or to stay focused or have expanded attention. All of those are areas where healing really touches people's lives by helping them recognize that there are other resources within themselves than just what humanly they might feel are available. Mm-hmm. And so healing brings out those spiritual resources. Mm-hmm. It shows you your connection to God and how the qualities and characteristics of that divine nature can expand a sense of what you are capable of doing.
But prayer isn't just used for the purposes of healing, even as you've described it. Can you, because I want to kind of, we won't get into the formulas of prayer because nobody would agree on what really, really works. Each person has to come to that themselves, right?
Well, that's right. You know, I think there's some common ground in that whole context of prayer. I think most people, by using the term prayer, recognize that it is another dimension beyond just mere human reason or logic, that we're looking for this spiritual inspiration. And I think most people would recognize that an important part of prayer is also being willing to receive an answer. You know, one of the things I point out in my lecture in helping people through prayer-based solutions over the last 40 years is that I've never seen a prayer that hasn't been answered, but I've seen a number of prayers whose answer hasn't been recognized. And that frequently happens when people go into a prayer with such a strong sense of what they want.
Okay.
That when the answer comes in terms of what they need,
okay,
it may not be recognized as an answer.
But my shoulder's in pain, and I need this pain taken away. I need this shoulder healed. So what you're basically saying is that may not be the problem. I'm acknowledging more of a symptom of a deeper rooted problem.
Exactly, Richard. Exactly.
Okay.
And that's what prayer will do. It's my experience in that realm of prayer is it's going to take care of the physical need, but there very well may be a much deeper need.
I've heard it said that if you were to put a prayer out, that you better be prepared for the answer or response, because the answer could be no.
That's right. As well as yes, the answer could very well be no.
Yeah. It's like when we're in relationships and we have a very important question to ask, you better be willing to accept the answer that may come that you may not like, as well as the answer that you may like.
Yeah, there's a really interesting healing in the Bible where Jesus asks a man that has been paralyzed in his feet. He's sitting around the pools of Bethesda outside of Jerusalem, and those pools have the legend of an angel coming down every now and then, troubling the waters, and whoever jumps in first is healed of whatever plague they have. And that's kind of the good news about the Pool of Bethesda. The bad news is it's only one healing per troubling.
Right.
So you got to get there first.
Mm-hmm.
So this fellow obviously hasn't gotten there anytime soon. And Jesus encounters him and asks him an interesting question, and that is, do you want to be made whole? And that seems to be different than the question, do you want to be free of your paralysis? Because interestingly, his answer is not, oh, yes. His answer is a justification of why he can't be healed. And been my experience that sometimes, even though our desires might be for greater freedom, that when that question comes about, do you really want to be whole? Are you willing to experience in those areas in your life, the demands of growth. And sometimes the answer to that is no, as well as yes.
You're, I'm sure, familiar with a lot of the more recent phrases to our lexicon in regards to the law of attraction and, of course, The Secret. And now there's another one coming out called Tapping the Source, which is supposedly a greater explanation of The Secret. And apparently there was something left out that they forgot to put in it. And now this book is supposed to have that. I'm just wondering, in regards to prayer, if there is an intent, if there's something that we need to do, have to do, should do in the context of a prayer that will get us what we're asking for, or, and maybe it's going back to what you said before, having put the prayer out there, but have absolutely no expectation.
Well, if you have such a firm outline about how your prayer should be answered, I think that's why people feel that their prayers haven't been answered, or that prayer isn't effective, or that even there isn't a God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all based on that assumption that I know exactly what it is I want, and let's see if prayer can get it.
Mm-hmm.
So prayer's got to be something more than just a process of wanting. You know, nothing wrong with wanting.
Sure.
But that's the entry point. You know, it's not the exit point. So if we're willing to take our wants or our desires and let them be molded a bit in this process of prayer, we're going to find that the answer comes to us in terms of what it is we need.
Do people have people seem to have lost the main purpose of prayer, and that is just communication in a relationship, whether it's, you know, husband, wife, children and parents, siblings, whatever the relationship is, or best friends. The relationship is not based upon want. It's based upon this connection that you have. And you talk in relation to that connection. You relate. You go out and do things together. But when it comes to God or the higher power, whatever you want to call it, it's like we're looking up to Santa Claus for the things that we want. Gimme, 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 instead of, hey, how's your day been? You know, this is the way my day has been, and then listening back for the reply.
Well, that's true, you know, and I think there are cycles of thought and attitude that go through society. Probably most people would admit that over the last few decades, one of the big emphasis in society has been in terms of getting what we want.
Mm.
And there are even some that look at attitudes that got us into this economic downturn or the recession as being tied to that concept. I heard a panel a while back where the economic pundits were talking a little about the systemic issues of recession, but then they got into what attitudes brought us here. And one of them said greed, and another said lack of self-restraint, and another said a lack of love for the greater good.
Mm.
And, you know, those, of course, don't just apply to the economy.
No,
basically,
absolutely not.
That can be your outlook on life. Mm-hmm. And if it is, then you're going to find that the process of prayer is going to challenge those and give you some better models of thought.
I find that interesting because when I think about greed, my first thought is the person who has that attitude, it's an attitude of lack. They don't believe there is enough, so they're going to get as much of whatever there isn't enough of so that they don't run out of it. And you see these television programs now about what they call the hoarders, those who pile up stuff in their homes to where they have these tiny little paths. I remember one where this woman had, they finally got to her front window. On the front window was a newspaper dated like 1982, which meant that that window hadn't seen sunlight through it since 1982. So these are the kinds of attitudes that are out there. And then you start wondering, well, where do these attitudes come from? How were these fostered? So actually, the better question now is, how do we shift? How do we transition out of those attitudes? Because it's not just individuals. It's almost our culture and our society. And we are spreading that across the globe.
Well, that's a good point. And I think that's why prayer is so important, because I'm not really sure that that's going to be done by mere human effort.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to have to require drawing on those spiritual resources that really are demanding paradigm shifts, you know, if you will, in your thought. And, you know, the hoarder example is, in a sense, a metaphor.
Yeah.
sometimes all of us have piled things up in our thought and in our experience that we really haven't processed that narrow the paths through which we can travel.
Yeah.
And that's what healing is about, too, is it helps people clear out the baggage. Because it's been my experience in helping folks that oftentimes the things that go on for a long time, you know, don't seem to get resolved are because we haven't dealt with the baggage. We've simply stored it and we haven't processed it.
I want to shift gears just a little bit here to talk a little bit about you. Now, we have you on the program to talk about this because you've been a practitioner for 40 years. You mentioned that earlier in the program. But to most people who are listening, you know, they don't know who Ron Ballard is. Now, if I had Deepak Chopra or Oprah or somebody else with the big name, we've got to be there. We've got to listen to this guy. He's got some credibility. Who is Ron Ballard?
Well, I grew up actually as a Christian Scientist. I had a background in growing up of solving the issues that came my way through prayer. And so as I really began thinking about what my life focus would be, it was pretty natural for me to want to continue to experience that process and to share it with others. So, you know, you can do this in a variety of venues. One of the things that I did for a period of time was campaign consulting and campaign management. I worked for a firm here in Southern California that did major campaigns, senatorial, gubernatorial, congressional, and even presidential campaigns. And one of the things that I gained out of that experience was how important it really was for people to be open to new ideas,
mm-hmm.
Not to carry such a rigid viewpoint into their experience that they can't learn.
Right.
You know, it's my experience is any good politician very soon after taking office will learn one thing. First, they're in way over their heads, you know. And frankly, all of the really great leaders learned that early,
mm-hmm.
and were willing to grow. Abraham Lincoln's a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, the tremendous moral and spiritual growth that people see in him really took place while he was in office. And he realized quite quickly that he wasn't equipped to deal with the magnitude of the challenge that he faced. But in that came a lot of wisdom because he was willing to use the process of prayer, which wasn't just asking God, help, get me out of this. It was asking God for understanding. Good example in the Bible is Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who inherits his father, David, throne, and he recognizes very quickly he's in over his head. And his prayer is not, you know, help me consolidate my political base or help me enjoy the spoils of this office,
yeah.
but it's give me an understanding heart that I may judge this so great a people.
It is a rather intriguing proposition to sort of when one is praying, one literally has to acknowledge that there is that greater power, that not that greater power that can just squash you anytime they want, but that greater power that is there to listen, to help, to support. And again, like you said before, in a lot of different ways that we may not have even thought of, like the person sitting next to you.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, one of the ways that we can appreciate that is really coming to grips with what is God's nature.
Now, that's a hard one, and I'll share with you why. Because I had a 15-year education in all of this because when I first started in this industry, I worked for a Christian radio station. And of course, I heard about the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament, and they were totally different gods. And so there was that juxtaposition. There was that. There was almost the good and evil, the evil God in the Old Testament versus the good God in the New Testament. That was just the way that it was. So where do we find out what the true nature of God is?
Well, a little historical perspective is helpful.
Okay.
You know, I think if you look at how people have perceived God,
mm-hmm.
which is different than what God is, but
that is true.
How people perceive God, you perceive God in terms of what it is you most need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a book out there that's fairly popular in Christian circles called The Shack. And it's about a fellow who has to come to an interview with God.
Mm.
And he's had a child kidnapped and murdered. And through police investigation, they find that this murder took place in this remote shack. So at some point, he gets this letter in the mail that says, we need to talk. Come to the shack. And so he goes, and the story is about his encounter with the nature of God.
Mm-hmm.
And his first encounter with God is that God is a black mammy. And he says, gee, I didn't expect you to be this.
Mm.
And the response, which I think is very interesting, is, I'm not. It's what you need me to be right now.
Hmm.
And, you know, I mean, the story, obviously, not real life, but...
Certainly, right.
But the lesson, I think, is well taken, is that people very frequently see God in terms of what they need at the moment. But there may be something much more than just that to help them define God. And I think, you know, more recently, in the last 50 years or so, most world wisdom traditions are kind of getting away from the idea of God being anthropomorphic or manlike.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking more in terms of what is the essence of God.
Mm.
So you find in virtually all of these traditions, one part of God's essence is love, unconditional love. Another essence is truth that is more than just human consensus. It's a divine absolute. And so, you know, people begin to recognize that it is vastly more useful to understand that essence than it is simply to debate the form of God. Because you and I can put the concept of love, if we see that as God's essence, into play every day of our lives.
Yeah.
I can put the concept of truth into my experience. I can endeavor to be truthful and honest as much as I understand that, and maybe even more through the process of prayer, into the way that I think, the way that I act towards others, the dealings that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you see, that to me becomes prayer, is you're living the convictions of your principle.
Yeah. If you've just joined us, I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. My guest is Ron Ballard, and he is an international speaker. He is also a practitioner and teacher of Christian Science Healing with a degree in political science. He formerly basically worked as you mentioned before, a campaign consultant, and had many clients both on both sides of the aisle, which is rather interesting because many people today, they don't see an aisle anymore. They see just one giant party, and you call yourself this, and he calls him or she calls herself that, but you're all part of the same mess that is out there. And I do remember going back to one of the elections back in the mid-90s, and of course the most recent midterm election that we held just recently, and I said, these two look the same. The one from, I think it was 94, and this one. And I'm going, and look how successful that one is. And, of course, I sat here going, we're not going to see anything of any dramatic change in this one either. At least there was no contract that they were promoting and so forth. But I think that a lot of people would like to pray for a whole new governmental body, and I don't see that happening So now we have to say, it's almost, okay, a toss-up, God help. What do I do? And I've actually encouraged people to really focus on their families. Focus your energies there. We know that there really isn't much we can do 3,000-4,000 miles away. There's very little we can do, let alone 300-400 miles away in Sacramento or from where I'm from in Phoenix. They're going to do whatever they're going to do. And if, like what you were saying, you try to encourage them to keep an open mind, wonderful. But we can't count on that. And so if we focus on the people around us, our family, our husbands, our wives, our children, our neighbors, the people we work with, that's where we're going to make the most difference.
Well, I think that's absolutely right, you know, and that has a tremendous impact and a tremendous difference. Very interesting observation made by Will and Ariel Durant in their massive study of Western civilization, and that was that as they looked at the thought changes in Western civilization, that inevitably those came about through the convictions of very few, that sometimes it was just one person. But that change doesn't have to come from the top down, so to speak.
Right.
Change can happen in our own convictions in our own lives. And one of the things that I have heard a lot about in my own practice, and it's one of the reasons I give a lecture on prayer and politics, is that this contentious feeling that we see in Washington or Sacramento or wherever we are has already filtered down to families.
Yeah.
That I hear people saying, you know, we can no longer get together and discuss because we have such different political ideologies. So you're absolutely right. Yeah. That's the place to start.
I can only imagine what Thanksgiving is like or Christmas dinner is like in some households, which is actually kind of sad. And I know that over the years, and this has actually struck me rather interestingly, in the Old Testament, it talks about praying to God so that our side will win. And I've heard this analogy. Well, if you're praying for your side to win, you're also praying for their side to lose or for them to die. And so when we pray for our political party to win, we want their side to lose, which means we'll have say in whatever we want, and they have none at all, which means they're no longer participating in the process. And I don't think that that's why we were put here, to alienate one another.
Yeah, exactly. One of the concepts that I used in consultation with chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee back in the 80s was a phrase that came from Mary Baker Eddy's book, Science and Health, where she talks about love as God being universal in its adaptation and bestowals. And that concept helped us to think through, since he was focused on resolution of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict,
mm-hmm.
A solution that, partial solution, obviously, that not only respected the right of the state of Israel to exist, but also the right of the Palestinians to have their own state. And that sort of kind of natural reasoning that comes from those higher spiritual principles is really important in terms of resolution. And actually, if you look at some of the kind of founding documents in our country, Jefferson, I point this out in my lecture, rallied a country to independence by getting people to focus on the principles that united them, rather than the debates that divided them. So he started that off with, you know, all individuals are created equal, that God has, or the Creator has endowed all individuals with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
He moved consciousness to a higher focus rather than debating the merits of staying with the crown or starting your own country.
Yeah. I would, my own personal example would be when I bought my first house back in 1993. And my wife at that time and I both knew that the process could take a while. It was going to be somewhat arduous. Even after we found the home, we got the loan, even then it was going to take some time to go through it. And so we had basically sort of a mantra, if you will, that we would to remind ourselves. The mantra was, in essence, we're buying a house. Doesn't matter whatever, doesn't matter what else happens. We are buying a house. If the appraisal doesn't come in at what we want, we are buying a house. And one of the things that did happen on the day of closing was that we found out we didn't have any homeowners insurance. Well, we did, but somebody had dropped the ball. We are buying a house. And that's what we did. We didn't allow those little things along the way to get in our way of what it was that we wanted. And that's really, if you want a more cohesive family, you want a better work environment, then that's what you have to focus on.
Yeah.
Not, oh, that person is, man, it was so terrible. And I also learned something else. Maybe you can expound on this. The saying that you can't change another person isn't true. You can by changing yourself.
Yeah, that's a really important point. That's where it all begins. You know, and maybe that mantra for the Thanksgiving season is we are a family.
Yes, very good. Yeah.
You know, and no matter what our differences and our points of view, that there's a higher principle involved there.
Yeah. It seems to me rather interesting that we have such a diversity of belief systems in this country, let alone globally, but that seem to inculcate into this country. I don't mean that in a negative way, because this is just—it's just what is. We have so many different faiths that are represented in the United States that come from other parts of the world, and yet they're all here. And when I have different guests on this program, they share their stories, and I have one gentleman who is sort of critical of the program and thinks that, well, all your guests are saying the same thing. I don't get it. This is ridiculous. To which I say to him, don't you think maybe there's a point?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that point is that there has been always a perennial philosophy that people emphasize over and over and over again. Hopefully, at some point, you get it. If you don't get it, you know, you continue to keep bumping up.
Yeah.
Against the infinite, you
know,
and it's there. I mean, you can see it if people have a biblical background, you know, you see it in the inspired writings in the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those writings probably are not so inspired.
Well, who's to know? But I mean, but your point is still well taken.
Yeah. Who's to know kind of comes down to Jesus' comment, by their fruits ye shall know them.
Exactly, exactly. You can't miss what they put out. It's plain and evident. And so we that's why we don't neither endorse nor say we're not in favor of what our various guests have on the program, whatever their topic is. We ask our listeners, check it out for yourself. I don't know if my guess, even you, Ron, you know, you're sounding very sincere, and I'm getting that from you. I have no problem there, but I'm not here to make up the mind of the listener.
Right.
The listener has to check it out.
And that's the only way that you find truth. I mean, you don't find truth by listening to somebody else and then saying, okay, well, that's what they say. That's what truth is. You find truth by taking an idea and playing it out in your own experience.
I had a guest on many years ago, and we chatted through the entire interview, and I took his book, and it was one of the first ones at that time that I'd read cover to cover. And there was something that he had written about in there where he did some research, and I thought, well, that's great, but that's his research, and if I repeat it, I'm repeating his research. So I did the research myself. I came to the same conclusion. I couldn't help but now it was mine.
Right.
I made it my own, but we don't do that anymore.
Well, that's one of the things maybe that
we should pray for.
Well, yeah, and that schools can do a better job of. You know, I had a professor in college that I thought made a really good point. He says, you know, it's not my job to tell you what to think. You can find that out on your own.
Yeah.
It's my job to help you understand how to think. And that process of how to think is a really crucial skill, probably more so than mastering, you know, the three R's.
Yeah. Which, off on a tangent, I take umbrage with, because there are no three R's. Reading is one R, writing starts with a W, and it's arithmetic that starts with an A. And I'm still trying to figure out how in the world an educated individual, if it were indeed, came up with that phrase. Because there are no three R's.
Yeah, right.
There's only one. Be that as it may, before we take our break, you travel around and you're sharing a multitude, I'm sure, of different talks, not just this one on prayer, practical solutions for economic hard times. You have different titles and different talks. Do you have, are they based upon what's happening? I mean, do you feel led to, hey, I want to do the prayers one in this town, or I want to do something else in another town, or that kind of thing? How does that work?
Well, the sponsoring organization, which is usually a Christian Science Church, decides for that particular year what the focus of their effort will be. And so I do give six different talks. I give one on prayer and the economy, prayer and politics, prayer and the environment. Neutralizing violence through prayer. And then I give a couple on just the whole concept of what healing is about. One of my favorite lectures is entitled, What Would You Do If? And then I, in that lecture, propose a number of scenarios, all that come from real life situations, to the audience, and ask them how they would deal with that. And the purpose of that lecture is to show people that inherently and intuitively they have the outlook of a healer. And, you know, I've given that many, many times, and I've never found it to be different. There are no exceptions. I gave it in Mumbai to a group of 200 high school girls, all of whom were Hindu. By the end of the program, you know, they were readily sharing their views and their convictions about their responsibilities to others and how they drew upon what they saw as their higher power.
And if it does nothing more than start to elicit conversation, so much the better.
Right.
We'll be back to continue our conversation here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Don't go away.
If we leave here today, we could be 1,000 miles away. Take to that road, see how far it goes. And on that great ocean road, all the countries in our bones. All the trouble that you know empties out as you go. Walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories.
And I'm your host, Richard Dugan, and I thank you so much for staying with us as we are here talking with Christian Science healer, basically a practitioner of prayer, Ron Ballard, and he is sharing with us his perspectives and his ideas from the Christian Science philosophy, if you will, as to how we can really, I'd have to say, live a better life. The word better isn't even the right word. A more whole, complete life.
Right.
I remember, I'd even throw the word perfect in, and I remember some years back when I kept hearing the phrase, you know, be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And of course, they were defining it more as the difference between good and bad, right and wrong. And I looked up the word in my concordance, which I still have to this day, and I looked it up in several other places, and what I found was it had nothing to do with right or wrong or good or bad. It had to do with completion. It was finished. And as creations of God, I'm sure as you see it, We're complete. We are perfect as we are. Now, from that standpoint, you know, we said, well, but if we were perfect, then how come our lives are in such disarray and we have so many problems? Can you maybe enlighten us a little bit as to how we can take that concept of perfection or completion and move it into a new realm for ourselves and our families in light of this concept of prayer?
Well, that's a really good point. You know, very frequently, people at least who are familiar with the Bible will come up with that quotation of be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And our sense of perfection usually means kind of without human error, doing everything right. Mm-hmm. But as your research showed you, it really doesn't mean that. Mm-hmm. It means wholeness. It means being well-founded. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, in the human experience, that's a messy process.
It is.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because the things that happen in our lives, if we are willing to learn from them, can be tremendous sources of strength and inspiration, not only for ourselves, but for others. So, you know, a good life isn't one that simply is lived by society's rules and one makes no mistake within those rules. A good life is a life where you learn,
mm-hmm.
and you are willing to take what you learn and apply it for the betterment of yourself and for others.
You know, I ask this question of almost all of my guests at the end of the program. You've probably alluded to it somewhere along the way in the program, but I'll ask the question directly before we run out of time. You have been involved with and practicing Christian Science for 40 years. You grew up in it, as you say, and now you're traveling around lecturing. You have been for a number of years, obviously. Why this? Why now?
Well, you know, first of all, one of the things that's happened in 40 years is that I've run into lots of different kinds of people. And I think, by and large, have been enriched by that. People with different philosophies, people with different attitudes and outlooks, maybe different theological perspectives. Frankly, one of the things that I learned in my work in political science as a major in that field is that politics is not a matter of compromise. Politics is a matter of resolution. And resolution comes when you're willing to take what is valuable and good
mm-hmm.
out of everyone's experience and combine it in a way that is, you know, in the vernacular, a win-win situation for everyone.
Right.
And so that's kind of a message that I carry today, whether I'm giving that lecture on politics or whether I'm talking about the whole process of healing in one's life. Is that there is a need to realize what's valuable and good out of our experience and combine it in such a way that moves us forward.
And just out of curiosity, in the last couple seconds here, do you see that anybody is listening to you in the political arena?
You know, I'm really greatly encouraged. First of all, I really don't have a very cynical view about politics. If you look at politics over, you know, in our country, a 250-year period or whatever, generally, mm-hmm. We get what we need. We get it in terms of balance. We get it even in terms of the challenges mm-hmm. that we face.
Yeah.
And people have to respect that.
Yeah.
You know, if you kind of get away from the personalities, even your own.
Yeah, exactly.
And get into the lessons, it is really a wonderful trip.
Well, Ron, I thank you for taking us on a wonderful trip here on the program.
Happy to do it.
Ron Ballard has been my guest. He is a Christian Science practitioner. We've been talking about prayer, practical solutions in economic hard times. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Join us every Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Until then, love to all.